Blog Talk Radio.
And you're in the G-Zo with Giovanni Gelati. Gio, what's going on today?
Thank you, Big Daddy. Well, today we're welcome, everybody. How you doing? We're playing the audio sample of D. Machow's book, Alive and Whole. This is a book about her journey, and also helping folks that have had amputations. The first part of this, because there'll be two audio books for this bestseller. This is a bestseller, has been a bestseller since it has been released in a prosthetics category, amputation, et cetera. D is a amputation specialist nurse, and she herself is an amputee. You can follow D on Twitter and a lot of other places. We're going to play this audio sample for D's book. It'll be available on July 23rd for sale in the Helping Hands Press store. And also after this, we're going to play Joy Ross Davis's audio sample for Sisters Divided. Without further ado, I'm going to hand it over to George Taylor, voice talent from narration by George. Here it is.
Helping Hands Press and NarrationByGeorge.com are proud to present D. Machow's Alive and Whole, Amputation, Emotional Recovery. Receiving a B.S. and M.S. in nursing, author D. Machow has worked over the past 50 years with over 3,000 amputees through her job at a trauma center, sports, mission work, and prosthetic research. As an amputee herself, she experienced a right below knee amputation at age 19 from a boating accident. Dee knows that losing a limb will impact every aspect of a person's life. This book describes the emotional process that a person experiences in adjusting to limb loss. It's based on the author's own story and professional experience, yet includes input from many others living with an amputation. A person's attitude and behavior will either promote or impede progress. An amputation can feel like a disaster or a nuisance. Most days, it feels somewhere in between. Listen to this sample. I felt every excruciating bump as the driver moved as slowly as he could over the rocky dirt driveway from the lake to the pavement. At last we were on the move as the sirens wailed outside. My friends told me later that there were two vehicles, our ambulance and a police car ahead of us. Our speed moved up to 95 miles per hour. A brief thought went through my mind. Too bad I don't get to enjoy this ride. I've never ridden in an emergency vehicle before. The hospital arrival was as I had hoped. Pain relief at last. So much was happening as they were trying to contact my parents and order some blood to replace my loss. I quickly announced that I knew my blood type to be O positive, thinking that would expedite everything. The doctor politely informed me that my blood needed to be cross-matched with other factors anyway, as the nurse slid the needle into my arm. Well, phooey. Knowing my blood type had seemed like important information for such an emergency, but nobody really cared. In my state of shock and injury, I don't think they would have taken my word for it anyway. Once I was comfortable from the spinal anesthetic, the emergency room nurses began to prepare me for the operating room. My bathing suit needed to be removed. Scissors were picked up as they gently informed me of this next step. No, I pleaded. It was a one-piece suit with a lovely pink flowered print. I just got it new, and I really like it. Can't we just take it off some other way? They were kind, but insistent that it needed to be removed this way and couldn't be saved. And so began the losses that went along with this tragic injury. The medical team worked most of the night, piecing my leg back together. There was now no pain, but I could hear the tapping and feel the jarring as they put a rod down the bone to connect the five breaks in my lower leg. Occasionally, I would arouse and talk with a staff that was familiar to me in the small hospital. At one point, I remember asking if I could look at my leg as they worked on it. The anesthetist said that it wouldn't be a good idea. I tried to press the issue, and very soon I slipped away into a deep sleep. Ha! He had the upper hand on that one. Hundreds of stitches later, I was finally wheeled into the recovery room. Glancing down at my leg, I saw my toes sticking out of a cast that was propped on a pillow. Huh? I thought. My leg is just badly broken. Perhaps things are not as bad as they seemed at first. As I was wheeled to my room, I saw my dad, mom, and brother in the waiting area. I was genuinely surprised as I commented, "What are you guys doing here?" They had driven slightly above the speed limit, I later learned, from our home north of Seattle. I guess I would expect them at some time, but not the middle of the night for just a broken leg. Perry was also sitting in the waiting area, looking like the proverbial basket case. Compassion overwhelmed me as I saw the guilt of his carelessness hanging visibly on his shoulders. The thought crossed my mind, "I'm glad I'm me and not him. I'd hate to know that I'd done this to someone." I wasn't angry at him. It was an accident. In the nursing dormitory across the street, another doctor had checked on the students. Tammy was pretty upset and was given a sedative to sleep. She wasn't sure if I would make it through the night. I also believe the visuals of the accident were harder on her, while my eyes were closed most of the time. A couple of weeks later, Tammy went to a Disney adventure movie where someone in the water was being pursued by a motorboat. She screamed and left the theater. The next few days were unclear to me as fever took over and I thrashed to find comfort. While the world focused on things like Vietnam, race riots, and the Beatles, I prayed vigorously for my badly damaged leg. In the fog of my fever, I saw a variety of doctors come by, looking seriously at my immobile, dusky toes. My student nurse friends were often around. They quietly tried to make me comfortable and make nutritious milkshakes and other concoctions that I might drink. I wasn't too interested, but made efforts to drink them, knowing that I needed to get well. 3 days after the injury, the heroic battle to save my leg was surrendered to the white flag of survival. Gangrene had set in, along with the vicious bacteria called Pseudomonas. The threat to my life was traded rapidly for the high price of my lower right leg. Although the propeller had sliced deeply in 9 places up to my hip, sovereign control and skilled surgical intervention salvaged my right knee and resulted in an amputation about 3.5 inches below it. This time, as I revived momentarily in the recovery room, I raised my head and glanced briefly at my right lower extremity. No foot or leg lifted the sheet in the natural form that had been there for 19 years. It was flat, empty. I rested my head back on the pillow with great sadness, but also an odd sense of relief. "It's over," I breathed silently. But it had only begun. Doctors who have reviewed Dee's book write, "With clarity, wit, and an accessible style, Dee Malchow provides a how-to guide for patients and their families confronted by the possibility or the established fact of limb loss." Kudos to Dee Malchow for providing absolutely essential insight into this terribly fraught clinical scenario. And the book conveys amazing information and has great value. Amputees have reviewed this book and written, "Your book is very thorough with the mindset of an amputee and provided food for thought that I would have never even considered unless I read this." And Dee's book is insightful, comprehensive, and encouraging, a fantastic source of information and hope for amputees and those who support them. Check out Alive and Whole, Amputation, Emotional Recovery by D. Malchow from Helping Hands Press and narrationbygeorge.com.
Sorry about that. Had myself on mute. Thank you, George. You're listening to the G-Zone. We just played D. Malchow's audiobook sample of Alive and Whole. What I'm going to do now, since we have a few more minutes left in the show, I am going to play an audio sample that I did not get to play last Thursday, and that is Joy Ross Davis's Sisters Divided. Now, if you know anything about Joy, she is a multi-genre author, anything from historicals to she has a nonfiction book that has to do with her journey with her mother through her Alzheimer's and dementia, which was on the bestseller list for quite a while. Mother, Can You Hear Me? Sisters Divided is a contemporary romance, has a lot of paranormal romance elements in it, has angels and demons. Overall, it's just an amazing story, no matter how you cut it. This is the audiobook. The audiobook is available right now in the Helping Hands Press store for $2.99. It is the first volume of the series, and I believe Joy is going to be releasing volume 8 or 9 coming up soon. So here is Joy Ross Davis's Sister Divided, as narration by George.
Helping Hands Press and narrationbygeorge.com present Joy Ross Davis's Sisters Divided, Volume 1, Wings. When Kiva and Maeve, two angel sisters trying to earn their wings, are sent on their first mission, they meet a pair of sassy elderly twins, Lucille and Martha, who live across from them. Trouble begins when one of the angel sisters sets her sights on the handsome grandson of the elderly duo, Chef Nick Barber. On the most important day of the chef's life, angel sister Maeve decides to wreak havoc in his restaurant. Sweet sister Kiva does her best to clean up her sister's chaos. But can she do it in time to save the reputation of the renowned TV chef? And will she be able to save the sassy elderly twins from possible death? It will take more than angel power to unite these four sisters in harmony and keep them all alive. Take a listen to this fun excerpt. As they walked through the glass double doors of the central lobby, Martha stopped. "Oh," she said, "do you smell that heavenly scent? It's like jasmine." A young woman carrying a very large cardboard box bumped into Nick and sent the contents of her box crashing to the floor. "Oh, my things," the young woman said, obviously rattled. "Here, let me help you," Nick said and bent down beside her. Lucille looked at Martha and raised her eyebrows. Martha leaned in close to whisper. "She's not his type. Too small. He likes the, you know, those full-figured types," she said softly and ran her hand across her chest. "Know what I mean?" "Oh, don't be silly. Look at those blue eyes. She's just beautiful and petite, too. He likes redheads, doesn't he?" "I can hear you, Grandma," Nick called from the floor. "Hmm," Martha said. "I don't see how. We were whispering." "There you go," Nick said as he lifted the box and laid it gently into the young woman's arms. "Are you sure you don't need help?" "He'll be glad to carry that for you, hon," Martha said and squeezed Lucille's hand. "We have plenty of time. Which unit are you going to?" Nick dusted off his hands. "I think we need to be on our way," he said. "I'm sure this young lady has plenty to do. We don't want to hinder her." "Why, my gracious, I'm not going to hinder her, Nick. Why would I do that?" Nick shook his head. "I don't mean you'd... We should be going." "Thank you so very much," came the sweet voice. "My name is Kiva. I'm in Unit 6. "What was your name, dear?" Lucille said. "I didn't quite understand it." "Kiva," she said slowly. "I never heard that name before. Who are your people, dear, and where are they from?" A broad smile spread over her face. Nick sighed. "Aunt Lucille, please," he said.
"It's all right," Kiva said. "My people are from farther north," she said. "I see," Lucille said and tapped her index finger against her lips. "Northerners." "Well, it's all right, dear. You can't help where you were raised. My people are from Tennessee. Good Southerners. They were all born here. Born and raised. I've traveled all over the world, but I've never found a place I loved more than the South. Paris is beautiful, though. Have you been?"
"Hush, Lucille," Martha said and grabbed her arm. "Let the poor girl get back to what she was doing. Come on now. I'm starving. My stomach thinks my throat's been cut."
Martha laughed out loud at her own joke, but Lucille glared at her. "How very rude," she said, "and in such poor taste."
"Daddy would have liked it," Martha said. "He was always making jokes. Remember, Lucille, when we went to Farmer Ed's place and Daddy belched out loud at the table?"
"Martha, the very idea. You better watch your mouth. If Mama were here, she'd have a hissy fit at such language."
"Daddy would have liked it,"
Martha said and chuckled.
"You're such an old stick in the mud, Lucille. You always have been. You could ruin a Mardi Gras festival."
"Grandma," Nick said, "we need to be going." He turned to Kiva. "I'm Nick Barber," he said. "These two fine women are my grandmother and my great aunt. They're in Unit 8 right across from you. If they get too rowdy, just let me know." He handed her a business card. "It was a pleasure to meet you, Kiva."
"You're very kind, Nick. Wait, that name. You're Chef Nick from the TV show?"
Nick nodded and smiled. "Yes, the very same," he said. "But you shouldn't have mentioned it. Now they'll both be here bragging about me for ages."
"Yes," Martha said. "Isn't he more handsome in person than on that TV? He's such a wonderful grandson, too."
"And he can cook the most delicious dishes," Lucille said. "He's my great-nephew, and he can outcook any other chef. Even Julia Child, don't you think so, Martha?"
"I think you're right, Lucille. He's a fine chef. He won that big cooking contest, remember? What was it called again, dear?"
Nick bent his head and shook it.
"I already know," Kiva said. "I watched him."
"You watched my grandson on TV?"
"Yes, I certainly did. He was amazing. I was so glad he won Cooking Network Champion."
Martha lifted her face and sniffed.
"Do you smell that? It smells like mint."
"Did I hear something about TV?" an unfamiliar, sultry voice said. The four of them turned in the direction of the new voice. A stunning young woman with long hair, fashionable sunglasses, and full red lips stood a few feet away. Dressed in skinny black jeans, a clingy silk blouse, and red stiletto heels, she reminded the three of them of a sultry siren. Temporarily stunned by her appearance, none of them said a word. They simply stared, mouths agape. After a moment, Kiva spoke.
"What took you so long?" she said. "I've been waiting for almost an hour. You have our only key."
The sultry young woman smiled.
"I was busy," she said.
She turned her head toward Nick. "And it appears to me you've been in some fine company." Reviewers love Joy Ross Davis's Sisters Divided, giving a 5-star rating on Amazon.com. Reviewers say, if you like elegant writing without profanity, erotica, smut, and gratuitous wasted space, I wish the story would have gone longer. This is not a religious, doctrinal book, but the characters are good angels, not truly evil. So writes J.A.L. JPV says, the creative and gifted Joy Ross Davis has delighted us once more with this, the first part of Sisters Divided. Two young angels fresh out of their academy are in search of their wings and have many challenges to accomplish in order to be worthy of them. The story is very entertaining, has some richly drawn characters, situations,
and of course leaves you wanting more. Very well written, says KD. The characters entertain and tease the reader into wanting to know more about the parallels and motivations behind the two sets of feisty twins. Pick up a copy of Volume 1 of Sisters Divided, Wings by Joy Ross Davis. The audiobook is available from Helping Hands Press and narrationbygeorge.com.
All right, you're listening to the G-Zone. We're playing some audio samples today. Just a heads up on what's coming on next week, the rest of the month. We come back tomorrow. We're playing the audio sample of Joy. We're playing this audio sample again and some others on the 21st, July 21st. Patty G. Smith is going to be on the show. I'm sure we're going to be talking about a story Patty and I are co-authoring called Shadeport, which is a mystery, a small-town mystery. Should be as nice. Got some humor in it, some interesting things. We'll be talking about that on the 21st. J.T. Patton returns on the 22nd. And on the 23rd, we're going to be simulcasting Helping Hands Press Thirsty Thursday Party, and it is Christmas in July. It's going to be a lot of interesting stuff on there, so please join us. That's an 8 p.m. start. To finish out the month, we have Mark Rubenstein. He's coming back, which is pretty cool, and Michelle Anthony. I have a little bit of time left in the show, just exactly enough time to play Legion, Murray Pure's Legion, which is really a cool audio book as well as a really nice ebook. Here you go, The Hawk, Name of the Hawk, Murray Pure.
Helping Hands Press presents The Name of the Hawk, Volume 1, Legion, by Murray Pure. No one knows anything about him. Not where he's from or who his mother and father are, not even the beautiful woman at his side or the community of men and women and monks who have raised him from a child know his real name or what is in his heart and soul. But one fateful day, when he cries out to God and God answers, the darkness sees Hawk for the first time, and it sets out to destroy him before he rises up in the power of God and Christ to fulfill his destiny. Let's listen to a sample from The Name of the Hawk, Volume 1, Legion, by Murray Pure.
I am the man, Mara. I will tell the story. You have not heard it before. I don't care how old you are or where you are from. You have been told there is nothing new under the sun, but this story is. It changed your life. It changed everyone's life, living and dead. It turned our world into another kind of world. But no one knows. They do not know. Before I die, you will have it all in your breath and blood, and then you can do with it what you will. Only you cannot go back and change it. No one can. It began and it ended, and it continues. The beginning was the birth of Galahad. You may have heard that Lancelot, the great knight of the Round Table, thought he lay one night with a woman he loved, Guinevere. But he was tricked by Elaine of Corbanic, a princess and the daughter of King Pelles, and he lay with her instead, for she wore a magic ring that altered her appearance. It was in this manner that Galahad, who was destined to be the greatest and the holiest of knights, was conceived. All this is so. Galahad was born in the castle of King Pelles, Elaine's father. He was given into the care of a great aunt, who was an abbess of a convent. There he was raised. That Galahad was spirited away to a convent is so. That he was destined to be the one who found the Holy Grail, the cup Jesus drank from at the Passover meal, the Last Supper, is also so. But there was another destiny, and there was another child born. For as Elaine writhed and tossed in the pains of childbirth, locked away from everyone else in her bedchamber, the midwife did not tell her that two infant boys emerged from her womb, one after the other, the first fair and lovely, and the second dark and loathsome. The dark one she hid away in a basket and covered with a soiled blanket. The child did not cry. The fair one, Galahad, she placed at his mother's breast. The dark one she took from the castle after she had opened the bedchamber to King Pelles and his court, and after he had placed silver coins in her palm. She raised the boy in poverty and obscurity in her hut in the woods. They called her a witch, but she was the farthest thing from a witch, for she spent her days in prayer and fasting and in sewing garments for those with leprosy. She raised the boy in kindness and grace. When he was 8, she felt the leprosy take hold of her, so she traveled north from her native Albion, or what the Romans call Britannia. She made her way past Hadrian's Wall and the Antonine Wall to Alba, which is Caledonia by the Roman tongue, and asked a man to row the boy across to the holy isle of Skirl. The lad never saw the woman he called his mother again. So Galahad was raised in a convent among nuns, and his twin raised at a monastery, which had monks and nuns who never knew marriage, as well as those who did. It is said he grew to have the sweetest voice, and the sweetest visage, and the manliest of frames, so that by the time he was 16, he appeared as a handsome man of 20, with golden locks and fair skin and flashing eyes. In fact, he looked like his brother Galahad, who was already in pursuit of the Holy Grail. But no one knew the story of the boy who had been rowed to Skirl and given into the care of the good monk Hamish. No one had any idea the boy was the son of Sir Lancelot or the brother of Sir Galahad. All they knew now was that he loved to read and to sing and to pray and was steady with a bow and quick with a sword. For these two, the monastics of Skirl, both men and women, married and unmarried, did not frown upon, ran at a good gait, and had the eye of every young maiden among them. On his 18th birthday, he would be honored before the Lord God and the whole community, and take his vows. One would be a vow to Jesus Christ, the other a vow to the people of Skirl, the third a vow that would last but 5 years, but that would transform him completely, the vow of a Nazarene. In addition, there would be a holy task he would have to perform that would take him far from the Holy Isle. Once it was accomplished, once the 5 years had ended, he would be permitted to return. His eyesight was sharp and keen. Where others could see clearly for a mile, he could see for 2 or 3. Sometimes when he ran quickly, it looked to others as if he were flying. When the men jousted with sticks or parried with swords, he was so fierce his opponents feared for their lives. So, with the eyes and the flight and the fight in him, the morning Hamish came to fetch him from the chapel, where the young man had prayed and fasted all night, to take him to where his head would be shaved and his vows made before the people of Skirl. Hamish spoke only one word and called him by only one name. Hawk.
Check out the rest of the story from Helping Hands Press. Other readers have written about it. Wow, what a great story, says KG. J.A.L. writes, come with me back to a time when God and faith were uncommon concepts, when the holy life was intense and the strength of one's authority was a mystery. M.B. writes, the captivating writing style drew me into the story right away. We invite you to check out Helping Hands Press, The Name of the Hawk, Volume 1, Legion, by Murray Pura, narrated by George Taylor of Narration by George. You can find these titles at narrationbygeorge.com and myhelpinghandspress.com.